All right, church, thank you for checking in. We're continuing in the book of Joshua. We are in to chapter 9 today, and this has been a series of events of Israel encountering different people, different cities in the land. From Jericho, they go to Ai. They have those encounters there, which we've looked at, and now they are going to deal with a place called Gibeon. And in each situation, the enemy meaning their physical enemies, the different cities and people groups that they're needing to fight against, the enemy uses a different strategy each time. In Jericho, the strategy was defensive. We have a really big wall, and that's our defense. In Ai, it was offensive. The men of Ai came charging out, scary, and chased Israel away in the first battle. Now, there was also obviously corruption going on there on Israel's side. Israel had become corrupted by tolerating sin in their midst. The sin of Jericho, the temptation to take the wealth of Jericho for himself with Achan, which we looked at. But as far as the men of Ai went, they didn't know anything about Jericho, presumably. They didn't know about Achan stealing stuff from Jericho. They went at it offensively. So Jericho was a defensive battle. Ai was an offensive battle in terms of, from Ai's perspective, they were going to go on the offense. They're going to chase Israel. And now Gibeon here has a different tactic. And this is just outright deception. And if you know much about war history, military history, history as a whole of the nations, you know that there's not just one tactic. When you are in a war, there's all sorts of stuff. There's disinformation. There's bluffs. There's attacks and counterattacks. There's defense. There's offense. It all mixes together. And so Joshua's campaign leading Israel into the land of promise is going to encounter all those sorts of things. There's also alliances made and everything else, which we're going to see as well in chapter 9, and especially chapter 10. So none of this should be a surprise to you, and yet it often is. Our enemy is not flesh and blood. Our enemy is spiritual forces of evil over this present darkness in the heavenly places. Heaven itself has suffered rebellion. Satan led a third of God's created beings in heaven in rebellion against God. And he is clever, and he is called all sorts of names. He's called the tempter, the accuser, the deceiver, a liar. He is all these different things. He is a nasty, nasty guy. He is clever. He is the most subtle of all the creatures in the garden in Genesis 3. Crafty. So don't be surprised that he has a lot of schemes. And don't be surprised that when one of them doesn't work, he'll try another one. And don't be surprised if some of them he is so effective at that you're not even aware they're going on. Okay, a serpent, a snake sort of creature can move very slowly, and it will coil and coil around. You know, there's the constricting sorts, where and it slowly, slowly, slowly suck the oxygen out of you, right? You don't know how did I get entangled in this, and how do I get out? Well, I'm completely entangled. There's no easy way out. That's one of the ways in which he deceives and camouflages his evil. All right, well, here we go. Let's actually look at it here. Joshua 9, verse 1 through 4. We'll start there. Now it came about when all the kings who were beyond the Jordan in the hill country and in the lowland and on all the coasts of the great sea toward Lebanon, the Hittite and the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hittite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite heard of it, that they gathered themselves together with one accord to fight with Joshua and with Israel. This is an alliance. And it mentions this alliance in chapter 9, and it goes back into it in chapter 10. It's just telling you, guys, there's a big alliance coming. And then in chapter 9, it mentions that, and it's going to drop that subject until chapter 10. So, verse 3, when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard that Joshua had done at Jericho and to Ai, they also acted craftily and set out as envoys and took worn-out sacks on their donkeys and wineskins worn out and torn and mended. And they go there this way. So, it lists off all these people groups, and they form an alliance, and then it lists a separate one, the Gibeonites, and they have a separate plan. they're not going to make alliance with these other enemies. They have a different plan. Their plan is deception. And so they go there, and I'll summarize this, but you saw it there in verse 4. They send some envoys. They bring worn out equipment. Everything's worn out. Looks like it's been used heavily. And they're going to go there, and they went to Joshua, verse 6, to the camp at Gilgal, and said to him, to the men of Israel, "We have come from a far country. Therefore, make a covenant with us." Men of Israel said to the Hivites, "Perhaps you're living within our land. How should we make a covenant with you?" And they said, "No, we're your servants. We came from a very far country," verse 9, "because of the fame of the Lord your God. And we have heard the report of him and all that he did in Egypt, all he did to the other kings. So our elders, our inhabitants of the land, sent us here." And so they're mixing truth with lies. All right. Did they hear what God had done in Egypt and to these other kings and cities? Yes, they absolutely heard. Did it scare them? Yes, absolutely scared them. They should have been scared. Remember, Rahab said this in Jericho. Everyone here is terrified. Our hearts are melting because of fear, because of your God. They have the fear of God. Okay. Now in Jericho, their fear of God led them to hide in the city behind their wall and then hunt down these spies to try to kill them. Their fear of God said the only way to beat him is to beat him. We're terrified of losing, but we're going to fight. That's the wrong mindset. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. And if you really feared God, you would not try to fight him. It's a false fear that would try to fight God. You don't fear him enough, obviously. And so you could say they don't actually fear God. But Rahab feared God. Rahab feared God and turned against her own people in her fear of God. Well, here comes Gibeon. And these guys are really crafty, and that's what it says about them. They have the fear of God. That much is true. They know that if Israel finds out where they are from, and Gibeon is a city smack in the middle of the land of Israel, not far at all from Jerusalem, and it's an important city. You will read some more about it here as we study Joshua. It's an important, significant city. And if Joshua and Israel know who they're really talking to, they would not make this alliance. Or it says, we'll get to it in a minute, they didn't inquire of the Lord. They didn't seek God's counsel on this, whether to make the alliance or not. And God had told them to wipe everything out. So if they knew who the Gibeonites were, they would not have made this alliance, right? But their only hope, if you're a Gibeonite, you're like, oh, we're not going to beat them in a war. They just beat Jericho. They beat Ai. They're coming. They beat Egypt. And they mentioned Sihon and Og, these other battles that had been fought during Moses' time as they approached the land over on the east side of the Jordan River and the south. So Gibeon is smart enough to recognize we can't beat them. They're smart enough to recognize that. They're smart enough to recognize that we can't even surrender to them. They're going to destroy us. They're going to burn us to the ground. They're not accepting surrender. This is God's judgment. Remember, they fear God. It's not that they fear Joshua and Israel. They fear them, but they fear God. Your servants have come from a very far country because of the fame of the Lord your God. We have heard the report of him and all he did in Egypt and all he did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon, king of Heshbon, and Og, king of Bashan. We've heard of this and we fear God. So they recognize there's no surrender. God himself is acting in judgment. There's no surrender. Surrendering won't help. There's no fighting it. That won't help. Their only shot here is deception, they figure. And so they go for it. And they act like they're from far away. And the people, Joshua and the men of Israel, verse 7, "Perhaps you're living within our land. How shall we make a covenant with you then?" Like the people of Israel are skeptical. They're like, something's up here. This isn't right. They're skeptical. It's a great question to ask. Who are you? Why do you want to be friends? Where are you from? Are you telling the truth? You know, if you're uncertain of something, these are reasonable questions to ask. And you live in a sinful world, in a spiritual sinful world, in which it is a spiritual world, it's not a natural world. And our enemy is not flesh and blood. So he will come to you in a deceptive manner. And it is good to be skeptical. Okay? You should expect some of this. A false alliance, false friendliness. Just deception of one way or another. oh, I'm just a poor, weak, long traveler, you know, take me in, whatever. Take whatever they can get. All right, verse 14. So the men of Israel took some of their provisions and did not ask for the counsel of the Lord. Verse 15. Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live. And the leaders of the congregation swore an oath to them. All right. This covenant that Joshua makes with them, apparently, it's not necessarily an alliance. He doesn't really make an alliance with them. He just says, we'll let you live. And God had said, destroy the whole, all the inhabitants of the land. He's like, we'll let you live. He's not sure if they're legit or not, but he's made this deal to let them live. All right. Then it came about, verse 16, at the end of 3 days after they had made a covenant with them, that they heard that they were neighbors and that they were living within their land. And then the sons of Israel set out and came to their cities on the third day. It says their cities are Gibeon, Chephirath, Beeroth, and Kiriath Jearim. So the sons of Israel did not strike them because the leaders of the congregation had sworn to them by the Lord, the God of Israel, and the whole congregation grumbled against the leaders. They know what their mission is. The leadership failed here. The leadership failed. It keeps saying the leaders. It doesn't really mention Joshua specifically a whole lot here, just the leaders. I don't know if Joshua had delegated out some of his authority. I don't know if Joshua is among the leaders. I don't know if Joshua, you know, as this is being written, they didn't want to impugn Joshua and give him a bad name, so they just didn't mention his name. I don't know the specifics. But the leadership failed the people. That's among the things that happened here. The leadership failed. The leadership failed to seek counsel of God. They trusted their eyes. They leaned on their own understanding, and they did not acknowledge God in all their ways. And so they were deceived. God had said to be careful to obey all he had commanded. Be careful. Do not depart to the right or to the left. Do not depart from it. And they weren't careful here. And they departed from God's track. Okay, that's what happened. And we will see this throughout the book of Joshua. And if you go into Judges, you'll see it there. That there are people still remaining in the land. And they continue to be a thorn in the side of Israel. They're undermining influence. And they influence towards idolatry, towards intermarrying, which brings corruption and all sorts of things into Israel that God had commanded them not to do. And it starts, you could say, innocently. They weren't trying to kill everybody. If you're really from far away, God gave us this land. If you're not from this land, of course we'll make an alliance with you. It started with them leaning their own understanding. They weren't like in rebellion against God. Oh, well, we don't care about God's commands anymore. We're going to go our own way. No, it wasn't that. It was that they simply didn't seek God's counsel on this decision. And it bites them. The other way of thinking about this, think of it from Gibeon's perspective. Gibeon is smarter than the average inhabitant of this land. It's smarter than Jericho. They learned the lesson of Jericho. Defense won't save you. They learned the lesson of Ai. Offense won't save you. They learned the other lessons of Sihon and Og over there on the other side of the Jordan. They learned their lessons that stubbornness and nothing will work. God himself is against them. They learned the lesson of Egypt. These people cannot be enslaved. God is on their side. They learned all these lessons. And they looked at it and they said, our only shot is to become servants. And that's what they offer. They say, we'll be your servants. And then once this all comes to light, verse 21, the leader said to them, let them live. So they became hewers of wood and drawers of water for the whole congregation, just as the leader spoke to them. And it's going to repeat the same thing a few times. They basically become slaves and servants. And that's how this works. That's how to understand this. How badly do you want into the kingdom of God? No, don't be a deceiver. Don't be a liar. Gibeon is not a hero in this, but they are humble. They are crafty and deceptive. So we're not trying to like be like the Gibeonites here, but they are willing to be servants in Israel. And there is some amount of humility that you can learn from that. They are deceptive. They are liars, and they are not good for Israel. Israel should not have accepted this their terms. Israel should have sought the counsel of God, and offered a different deal. There is a process. Rahab followed the process. Ruth, who comes a generation or two later, follows the process. There is a way through this that you can follow the Lord, surrender, and join him. But the Gibeonites did not offer this. The Gibeonites offered a covenant where we remain Gibeonites. We're not offering to become Jewish. We're not offering to become God's people. We're offering to remain independent, and you just don't kill us, and we'll be your slaves. And those are not God's terms. But you could see why Gibeon would want that. You could see why they see this as either a life or death thing, and we'll use deception and we'll lie. They're but bearing false witness against their neighbor. They're breaking the commandment. They are neighbors, and they are lying to them. They're bearing false witness against Israel, and Israel believed it. So a few lessons to learn. One, seek God's counsel. In all your ways, acknowledge him. Seek God's counsel. Seek God's wisdom, because you can be easily deceived. Proverbs, what is it, chapter 2, that the wisdom of the Lord will be a shield about you. It will guard you. It will preserve you. Okay? So seek his wisdom. Lean on him. Seek his understanding in all your ways. That's your lesson. If on the other side of it, think of it this way. Convert. Give your life to Christ. Be a servant of Christ, whatever it takes. Do not fight against him, and do not offer God your terms. You go to the Lord in full surrender. That's the right way to do it, the way Rahab did it. All right. This deception is out there. You can be easily deceived. Our world is a deceptive place. It will deceive you into things to compromise your faith in ways that you must be seeking God's counsel at all times, or else it will not work. All right. God bless you. We'll go farther into this, analyzing these guys a little bit more in chapter 9 here next time. I'll see you then.